It's good to see everybody. It's actually good to be back here. It's one thing to be invited to go speak somewhere. It's a whole different level to be invited to come back to speak. So thank you so much for having me back. And now I have some really good news for you. The topic for the day is, do all religions lead to God? And the answer is no, so we are done. Thank you so much. Unfortunately, it is not that easy, because this question, whether all religions lead to God, is one that many people ask, and many people believe they have good reasons to think that the answer to this question is actually no. When you ask a question, do all religions lead to God? Actually, they think the answer is yes, all religions lead to God. What I want to do is to help us see why a yes answer to this question is so appealing to so many people, why they think that's actually the right answer to give, that all religions lead to God. This is the attitude that you will find with a lot of the people that you will talk to about God, about salvation, about Jesus, whatever you want to talk to them about. When it comes to religion, they will tell you that all religions, everybody in the end will find God. And so this answer is appealing, very appealing, for several reasons. And one of those reasons is, in the end, if all religions do lead to God, in the end, everybody finds God. And who would not want that? Who really sleeps, goes to bed at night wishing that some people somewhere would perish forever and ever? Don't we want everyone to find God? That's why we do evangelism. That's why we plant churches. That's why we're trying to plead with people to come to salvation. So if we can have the answer right now that every religion that you follow will lead you to God, that seems to be very, very appealing. For other people, they believe the answer is yes for another reason. They believe that it is difficult to find objective truth, the kind of truth that everybody will be sure about, 100% convinced of, and to know with certainty. And it's difficult to come up with that kind of truth, we are told. And this is what you find, for example, let me give you a quote from a man named William Graham Sumner, who wrote this many years ago. And this is an attitude that has continued to persist in the minds of many people. And the claim is this: every attempt to win an outside standpoint from which to reduce the whole to an obscure philosophy of truth and right based on unalterable principles is delusion. So what is he saying? He is saying that if you assume that you can have a vantage point from which you can look at all of reality and come to a conclusion about what is right and what is wrong, you are deluded. There is no such standpoint. And so we are all in a place where we are dealing with just sections of what may be true. And you've probably heard the story about the blind man and the elephant. They were trying to describe what the elephant is like. And one man was touching the side of the elephant, and he said the elephant is actually like a big, huge wall. Another one, who was holding onto the trunk, thought that the elephant is actually like a snake. Another one, holding on to the tail, says that the elephant is like a rope. And the guy holding on to the leg of the elephant says it's actually like a tree. And so they argued about this. This blind man argued about this. And then somebody found them arguing and sent them to a guru, a very wise man in the village, who would tell them what the real answer is. And he was asleep in his room or upstairs. He heard them arguing outside. He comes to the balcony and he asks them what they're arguing about, and they tell him what their views are about the elephant. And he shouts from his balcony, he says to them, "You are all wrong. The elephant is not like that. You need to put all those pieces together. And if you do that, you will have the whole truth, and you will see that everybody actually has some base of truth. And so all religions, in the end, will lead to God." This is how Mahatma Gandhi put it. The soul of religion is one, but it is encased in a multitude of forms. The soul is one, but it has different forms. It's expressed in many different ways. This is a very popular view out there. And maybe some of you have seen this meme that is making rounds on the internet. It's a figure painted on the ground, and if you stand to the right of it, it looks like a nine. If you stand to the left of it, it looks like a six. And so they are arguing about what number we are looking at. And this is what the caption says: just because you are right, it doesn't mean that I am wrong. You just haven't seen life from my perspective or from my side. And that means when you claim to be right as a Christian and somebody else to be wrong, it's only because you haven't seen life from their perspective. If you did, you'd be able to see that they are also right. I remember watching one of my favorite movies, is Fiddler on the Roof. There's a scene that I think is very funny, where this young revolutionary comes to a village where these elders are selling milk. And so he comes there with a newspaper and he says to them, "You need to read the newspaper tonight to find out what is going on in the outside world." And one of the old men says to him, "Why would I care? Why should I care about what's going on in the outside world? Let the outside world care for its worry for itself." And another, the young man, and one of the lead characters, Tevye, says to this man, "He is right. We shouldn't care about the outside world." And the young man says, "The outside world actually affects everything else. We cannot afford to ignore the outside world." And Tevye turns to him and says, "You are also right." And then someone else standing there says, looks at them and says, "He is right, and he is right. They can both be right." And Tevye looks at that guy and says to him, "Well, you are also right." So everybody is right. And if we are all right, then there's no point arguing about anything because we are all right. And everything, eventually everybody finds God. We have no objective truth. And this is what being taught these days in a very, very powerful way. And there's another reason why it is arrogant to be exclusive, we are told. That if you're exclusive, you are arrogant. The best quality to have, we are told, is humility. And if you're a humble person, you will not be going around telling people that I know I'm right, everybody else is wrong. And in this, there's some truth to that. You see, maybe you've heard a story about the three passengers who were on a plane. One was a very highly accomplished PhD science researcher. The other one was an old pastor who had preached the gospel for many, many years. And the third passenger was a backpacker. He was just traveling the world, just to see things with his backpack. That's all he had. And the pilot comes back to them and says to them, "I have really bad news for you. This plane is going to crash, and there's nothing I can do about it. I have more bad news for you. I only have three parachutes." He said, "It's my plane. My parachutes, I'm taking one." He took one and he jumps off. So this guy, three people are looking at each other with two parachutes, and the researcher says this to them. He says, "The world needs me. I have given the world so much information about diseases and all kinds of things, and I'm on the verge of some major breakthroughs. The world needs me. So I'll take one of the parachutes," and see, he grabs one and he jumps off the plane. The old preacher looks at the young man and says to him, I know where I'm going when I die. I have preached the gospel for a long, long time. I'm ready to meet my maker. So you just take the remaining parachute and jump off the plane. I'll be fine." And the young man says, "Actually, that is not necessary, because that brilliant scientist jumped off the plane with my backpack." So you can be a truly brilliant person in one area and be totally ignorant in another area. And so this calls for some humility. And so we are told, because this is true, we should answer the question with a yes. All religions lead to God. Now we run into serious problems as Christians, because Christianity, as we all know, is exclusive. Christianity will have none of that. This is what the Bible says in Deuteronomy 6, from verse 4 to verse 5. "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one." Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. Deuteronomy 6, 4 through 5. And then in Acts chapter 4 and verse 12, the Bible says, salvation is found in no one else, for there is no other name under heaven given to mankind by which we must be saved. What about Jesus himself? Jesus says this, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. So we have a problem. If the answer, according to the world, is supposed to be yes, all religions lead to God, what do we do with these exclusive claims of Christianity? That's the question that we are trying to answer in the Unconvinced series today. And what I want to do is to show you that in spite of the seeming attraction, the appeal that is there in trying to answer this question in the affirmative, the answer is really no. Not all religion, all religions do not lead to God. The answer to that question is no. And I want to take some time now and explain to you why I believe this is the right answer, the right way to think about this question, whether all religions lead to God. And the first reason why this is a serious issue is that there are non-religious worldviews. If you are trying to be inclusive, you are trying to say that you be nice and that you help everybody by telling them that all religions lead to God, what do you do with non-religious views? What do you do with the people who do not want religion? They don't want God. They actually think that religion is part of the problem. What do you do with them? Where do they go? Do they find God? And many of them, they are atheists and they don't want to go to God. The last thing they want to do is for what they believe to lead them to God. So we still haven't solved the problem. We are still being exclusive. That's one problem that we see with this view. If you try to answer the question with a yes, that all religions lead to God, there are non-religious worldviews. Secondly, not all religions claim to lead to God. For example, Buddhism, at its core, is actually an atheistic religion. They don't believe in God. So to say that all religions lead to God is a mistake because there are religions that are not looking for God at all. So they are not interested in finding God. They will tell you that if you answer yes, you are wrong because they don't think that God exists, even though these are religious positions, religious viewpoints. And reason number three, religions actually contradict each other. They contradict each other, so they cannot all be true. For example, if it is true that Jesus is the only way to God, that means that if you are teaching Islam or some other religion, you are wrong. If that's what you are teaching, you are wrong. They contradict each other. Listen, as we'll see in a second, it is possible for all religions to be false, but it is not possible for all religions to be true, because logic is one way to tell whether or not a position is true or not. If you can show a position to be false, to be contradictory, you have shown it to be false. That's how you identify falsehood. And because religions contradict each other, there is no way they can all be true. And the claim that there is no vantage point from which you and I can stand to be able to see everything and be able to make pronouncements about our world is actually a false claim as well. Let's look at this view again by William Graham Sumner. He says, every attempt to win an outside standpoint from which to reduce the whole to an absolute philosophy of truth and right based on an unalterable principle is a delusion. But what is he doing? He is assuming an outside standpoint. He is looking at all the views and is saying, if you don't all agree, you are deluding yourself. So he has that vantage standpoint that he's telling us that it's not possible to have. That is called a contradiction. And so the view is actually false. What about these blind people who are feeling the elephant? Is there anybody in this story who has that vantage point? Of course, the guy in the balcony who can see the whole elephant and can tell everybody what they're looking at. So it is not possible to avoid making pronouncements about reality. If you're telling us that it's not possible to do that, you are already making pronouncement about reality while saying to us that it is not possible to do that, and that is a contradiction. You don't have to know everything there is to know to be able to know things that are true about a particular field or a particular area. So religions contradict each other. There is no way they can all be true. So every religion or worldview is exclusive. We just said a few minutes ago that Christianity is exclusive. That is true. But so is every other religion on the face of the earth. So is every other worldview. Even a faith like Baha'ism, which tries to combine all religions, it also gets to the point where there are people they cannot include because they have to exclude the exclusivist. So it's not possible for any position to include everything, because anybody who disagrees with that view becomes an outsider. And that's just how truth works. That's just how truth works. It is possible for all religions to be false, but it is not possible for all religions to be true. It is possible for all religions to be false, but it is not possible for all religions to be true, because they contradict each other. And so we get to the point where we are kind of stuck. So what do? We have all these religions, all these claims out there. How can we be able to evaluate them and be able to come up with a view that is defensible, that is consistent, especially for those of us who feel so inadequate because we haven't taken the time, devoted our lives to studying all these different religions? That sounds like a very, very daunting question. But the answer to it is actually very simple and very straightforward, because all the worldviews in existence, all the views out there, can actually be grouped under one of three categories. There is the view, the claim, that only the universe exists. Only the universe exists. God doesn't exist. On the other extreme, you have the view that both God and the universe exist. And so, there are two variables here. God and the universe. Depending on what you say about God and the universe, your view, your religion, your position is going to fall under one of three categories. The first category is only the universe exists. The other one, on the other extreme, only God exists. And in the middle, we have the view that both God and the universe exist. These are the only worldviews possible. Once you begin to get to the root claims that are being made about a particular worldview, the worldview is going to fall under one of these three categories. The view that the universe exists will tell us that there is no God, that matter plus time, the space-time continuum, can explain everything about our existence, about the entire world. That's all there is. And that's obviously naturalism or atheism. There are many people who hold to this position, that the physical universe can explain all of reality. Only the universe exists. God doesn't exist, no spirits, no demons, nothing like that. Only the physical universe. On the other extreme, we have the view that the universe doesn't exist. Only God exists. This sounds weird to us, especially for those of us from the African culture, I guess, because it doesn't seem to make any sense that nothing else exists apart from God. So you ask yourself, what about all the people that I see and the chairs and the trees and the buildings and the vehicles, all these things? What you'll be told is this. Those things are an illusion. They are actually like drops out of the ocean. If you take that drop of water and put it back in the ocean, its individuality disappears, and what you are left with is just water, just one thing. So everything in the end is all one inclusive whole. This is what many Eastern religions teach. The most popular version of this teaching is called pantheism, and that's the claim that everything is one. That's why you get jokes like the one you probably heard before, about a man who walked up to a hot dog stand and say to the hot dog vendor, make me one with everything. Yeah, some of us will get that maybe in the evening when lying down and thinking about it. Everything in the end is one. That's the claim there. In the middle, we have the view that God exists, God is eternal, he is uncreated, and God created the universe. And under that, the only serious competitors are Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. So it's not difficult to classify all these views and be able to evaluate them without having to be an expert in all of them. You just need to know what they believe about God and the universe. That's all you need to know. I wish we had the time to look at these different views and critique them, but we really don't. So we'll be moving on a little bit. But I do want to say something. I think this view that only God exists, the universe doesn't exist, I find it to be extremely troubling to me, even logically speaking. Because in order for you to hold to this view, you have to believe that you don't exist. But for you to believe you don't exist, you have to exist to claim you don't exist. So this view is, as Descartes said, I think, therefore I am. Even when I doubt that I exist, who is doing the doubting? This is a very difficult view to hold. And what they will tell you is your problem is you're trying to use logic. Now, if your view commits you to violating logic, you can have it, as far as I'm concerned. That's a view that is difficult to me. What about this view that only the universe exists? We have way too many reasons to think that the universe actually began to exist. It hasn't been here forever. Space, time, matter, energy all began to exist at a finite moment in the past. And if they began to exist, whatever brought them into existence must have existed without space because they created space. It must have existed without time, so it must be timeless because they created time. It must be enormously powerful and given the vastness of the universe, extremely intelligent given the complexity of the universe, and it must have been personal because it could make decisions. And when you begin describing the attributes of whatever brought the universe into existence, you find yourself reading the table of contents in a theology, introductory text in Christian theology about the attributes of God. So that's a very difficult view to hold. And Islam, Judaism, those right now, all we are doing is trying to look at different ways of classifying these views so we can understand them. We don't have the time to be able to look at all these views in detail. Those are topics for another day. But there are tests that are used to evaluate worldviews. You can use this test to tell whether or not the worldview is consistent with reality or whether or not this worldview is true. And I'll give them to you, this test to you, in a tweet by our team leader, Ravi Zacharias. He tweeted this. There are three tests for truth: logical consistency, empirical adequacy, and experiential relevance. And what he's saying is this. As I said in the beginning, if you can show a view to be logically inconsistent, to contradict logic, you have shown that that view is false. And if it doesn't explain reality as you experience it, if it forces you to deny reality, you can also assume that that view is actually false. And if it doesn't apply to your experience, it's also a serious problem. Let me illustrate that a little bit more, experiential relevance, with the idea of human nature. If you were to ask people who would tell you that only God exists, you ask them, then what is wrong with human beings? How do they explain that? Why do we seem to be here and what's going on with that? What they'll tell you is this. Your main problem is lack of knowledge, and what you need is enlightenment. If you can become enlightened, you can be able to see reality as it actually is. So that's one view. It's enlightenment that we need. Nothing else. If you're enlightened, you'll be able to solve all your problems. With atheism, there is not even a way to frame the question, let alone try to give an answer to it. Atheism or naturalism is one of the most, probably the most impoverished view out there. Now, so I've given you three reasons. And one reason was that there are non-religious worldviews. That's why we answer the question with a no. The question was, do all religions lead to God? And we said the answer is no, because even if you were to say all religions lead to God, there are non-religious worldviews. So what do you do with those? We also said that not all religions aim at God. They don't all aim at reaching God. So to say they all lead to God doesn't really make any sense. And they contradict each other. And because they contradict each other, they cannot all be true. It's possible for all of them to be false, but it is not possible for all of them to be true. And let me give you the fourth reason, which is a powerful, powerful reason. And the reason is this: God has spoken. We could say that all this is speculation, but if God has really spoken, then that is the final answer. And God has indeed spoken. And because God has spoken, we know the answer to the question whether all religions lead to God. And I will be, for the next few minutes, talking about why I believe that the God of the Bible, the God revealed in the scriptures, is actually the God who made this world, the God who made you, and the God who made me, and the God who seeks to have a relationship with you and with me. Because there's a vast difference between every other religion on this earth and Christianity. Unlike, this is what Michael Green says, unlike other holy books, the Bible does not record the story of human beings in search of God, but of God in search of human beings. The Bible is a collection of an epic story about God reaching out to find you and to find me. There is no other religion in this world that gives us anything close to that at all. God has spoken. And since God has spoken, we know the answer to the question, because he has told us what the answer to that question really is. And I'm going to focus on the cross of Jesus Christ. And in talking about why the God of the Bible, the answer, the Sunday school answer, will suffice for now. It's because of Jesus. It's because of Jesus. So, why Jesus? Number one is his diagnosis of the human condition. He did not say that our main problem is lack of knowledge and the solution is enlightenment. What he said was that our main problem is that we have rebelled against God. We have sinned against God. We know what we ought to do. We just choose not to do it. And that is why our parents and teachers spend the first few years of our lives teaching us how to write and say our names. And then we spend the rest of our lives walking around with a photo ID to prove that the names we call ourselves are really our names. That is our experience in this world. I remember being invited to go and speak at the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta, the headquarters. They had an event there on the National Day of Prayer that was the very first Christian event that they had ever had on that campus. These are research scientists, and when I got there, they sent me, first of all, they called our ministry. I was very new to the ministry, RZIM in the U.S. So they called there, and the receptionist transferred them to my desk. So I picked up the phone, and this lady says to me, we want you to come and help us. We have an event that we are putting together. We don't know if anyone will show up. We do want to do this event here at the Centers for Disease Control. They are very hard-nosed skeptics here. They are all scientists, very gifted, very smart. They don't care about the things of God, but we do want someone to come and speak. So I said to this lady, I said, what you want to do is you want to put the phone down and then call back when there is somebody here who is more experienced than I am in speaking to those kinds of people. And she said to me, no, if Ravi Zacharias thinks that you are good enough to be on his team, you are good enough for us. Just prepare to come. So they sent me a stack of forms to fill out. They were that thick. They asked me every question under the sun. They wanted to know every address I've ever used, every place I've ever visited, every country, how many times and why I went there, who I went to see. They asked me when I was born, where I was born. They almost asked me why I was born. So I filled it out and sent it back in. I waited for a couple of weeks and I got the answer back. I was approved to go there. When we got there, they checked everything, even under the car. They turned the visor, they took the mats out, the engine, everything. And then so they told me, put the car over there. Then they searched us as well with my colleague. And going through there is like going through the airport. They give you a badge and they tell you, you cannot go to any place without somebody from that center with you. Even in the bathroom, somebody had to come and watch, make sure I went to the bathroom and came out. And they made my work really easy that morning, because when I got up to speak, I said to them, I'm here to convince you that human beings are sinful. But if you didn't already believe that, why would you go to the trouble that you just went through to get me into this building? And I could see that by the way, I was told when I got there, this lady said to me, I don't know who will show up. Maybe it will be just the two of us. I said, if it's the two of us, we just pray. It's the National Day of Prayer, we just pray. There were more than 150 that showed up during lunch hour to hear the gospel presented for 45 minutes. It was an amazing, amazing experience. But they made it easy for me to prove to them that Jesus was actually right in saying that your problem and my problem is that we have actually sinned against God. Someone sent me a story that illustrates this in a very, very nice way, and I want to read it to you. It's called When Grandma Goes to Court. This is a grandmother, when grandma goes to court. Lawyers should never ask a Mississippi grandma a question if they're not prepared for the answer. In a trial, a southern small town prosecuting attorney called his first witness, a grandmotherly elderly woman, to the stand. He approached her and asked, Mrs. Jones, do you know me? She replied, why, yes, I do know you, Mr. Williams. I've known you ever since you were a boy, and frankly, you've been a big disappointment to me. You lie, you're unfaithful to your wife, you manipulate people and talk about them behind their backs. You think you're a big shot when you haven't the brains to realize that you'll never amount to anything more than a two-bit paper pusher. Yes, I know you. The lawyer was stunned. Not knowing what else to do, he pointed across the room and asked, Mrs. Jones, do you know the defense attorney? She again replied, why, yes, I do. I've known Mr. Bradley since he was a youngster too. He's lazy, bigoted, and he has a drinking problem. He cannot build a normal relationship with anyone, and his law practice is one of the worst in the entire state, not to mention that he, like you, is also unfaithful to his wife. Yes, I know him. The defense attorney nearly died. The judge asked both counselors to approach the bench. In a very quiet voice, he said, if either of you idiots ask her if she knows me, I'll send you both to the electric chair. And that's our reality, that we know exactly what we are like. We have just learned how to manage sin in our lives. We know that when Jesus said that our main condition is that we have rebelled against God, we have sinned against God, we know that he was right. D.L. Moody said this, that if a young man is stealing nuts and bolts along the railroad, and you take him and educate him all the way to college, by the time he's done with his college education, he'll be able to steal the whole railway line. That is our reality. The diagnosis Jesus gave, that we have sinned against God, is right on. And we prove him right every waking moment of our day. But he didn't just diagnose the problem. He also offered a solution that you're not going to find anywhere else in this world. He said, your issue and my issue is that we have rebelled against God. And then he solved that problem in a magnificent way, however you look at it. Philosophically, if you look at it, we are trying to reconcile justice and love. You have a God who is completely, entirely holy, will never be mixed with sin in any way, and you have human beings who are sinful on the other end. How do you bring the two together? And what Jesus did was, he took what was meant for you and for me upon himself, and because he did that, you and I are able to go free. And by that one act, Jesus satisfied God's eternal justice, and he also satisfied his love, God's love. And what you and I received was mercy. We received grace, and we can be able to be forgiven, to go free. No other worldview in this world has a solution like that. Many of them will tell you that in the end, there will be a scale that will be weighed on. Your good deeds against your bad deeds. The problem is this. Even if your good deeds outweigh your bad deeds, you've still done bad things. And if you're going to a holy and perfect God, it is not going to work. Because the main problem are not the individual things that you and I do. our main problem is the condition of our heart. We do those things because our heart is rotten, and that's what needs to be fixed, and that's what the cross of Jesus Christ was really all about. It fixed that problem for you and for me. His solution is powerful. His solution is amazing. It's powerful in a different way. The moment, even right now, the moment that you choose to give your life to Christ, you are accepted into the family, and you know with certainty that you are forgiven, that you are right with God. In every other religion, you are never going to find out until you get to the gate, to the entrance, where your deeds or something is done to try and determine whether or not you are qualified to enter. Jesus' solution is final, it's powerful, and it's available for anybody who wants to take it. And then we have his proven record throughout history. This also is truly amazing. He has changed history. He changes entire nations, but he also changes individuals. I grew up under very difficult circumstances myself. My father, who was employed, abandoned the family, and he actually kicked. We were living in a company house in a place called Gilgil, not too far from here. My father kicked out the family, and my mom had 7 children to take care of with no home. So she had grown up in an area near my Mahio, so we came to my Mahio, and we still had no home. In those days, there were people who used to farm there, and they had a lot of corn and all that, and they had built some structures there that they would live in. They live in those structures every now and then when they were working on the farms. They were not meant to be lived in as homes. So my mom talked to these people and asked me if we could use those structures to just live in them as she figured out what to do for her children. So they allowed us, and we lived in those houses. We kept moving from one. They would tell us when they were coming. We moved to another one. I just had 1 pair of shorts and 1 pair of T-shirt. That was it. That's all I owned in this world. So we would sleep on the floor. I remember the very first hut that we slept in. I woke up one morning. I was on one side. There were 3 stones in the middle for the fireplace. No electricity, of course. No lamps, nothing. So we'd have to keep the fire going to get some light in that little shack. But I woke up one morning to find I was sleeping on one side with my brother and my mom and my sisters on the other side. And I looked at where they were sleeping, and there was a large snake, a puffader, right there. I screamed. We all ran out. I tried to persuade my mom to let me go back and kill it, but she wouldn't allow me to go in. We saw this man walking by, and my mom called him, and he came and looked in there, and he said in Kikuyu, "Hey, hey, etinene," saying, "It's huge," and then he ran away. It's a really good thing I don't remember who the person was, otherwise I would go talk to him today. That snake was not killed, but we had to sleep in the same hut that night. It was raining, we had no place to go. All I remember is sitting up, taking turns, keeping the fire going, and just shining the torch around, a stick with fire on it. A torch is something different here. I don't even know what we call it. We call that in Kenya. In the U.S., a torch, that's what a torch is. But here's a flashlight, right? A torch is a flashlight, but in the U.S. it's different. I'm kind of confused because of living in different places of this world. So just looking around to make sure there was no snake. And you can imagine the kind of dreams and nightmares you would have as a kid if you did fall asleep during that time, which happened to me. We were so happy when we looked around and there were rats in the house because we knew there was no snake around at all. These were miserable, miserable days. If you had told me at that time that God would one day take a person like that and send me to the places he sent me to preach the gospel, I would have thought that you are out of your mind. But God takes the weakest of this world to shame the wise. He changes lives, not just for entire nations, but also for individuals. And every human life matters to him. His proven record throughout history. When I became a believer, there was one person that I really longed to see come to Christ. And that was my grandmother. Because at one point, my mom sent me and my sister to go and live with my grandmother. And she became like a second mom to us. And when I heard the gospel, I could not wait to share it with her because I knew that she was very scared of death. He didn't even want to mention the word death. She was also addicted to tobacco. She used to sniff tobacco, and she had to have it night all day. She had to have it. So we went. I shared the gospel with her before I left to go to the U.S. There was no reaction. She was actually very disappointed in me. She said to me, "The only reason you've fallen for the white man's religion is because you are too young to understand what these people did to us." So I left, went to the U.S., and I called home. She happened to be there. And she said to me, she has something to tell me. She said, when she came to the phone, she said, "Child, I heard what you told me about asking Jesus to save me." And she said, "I tried it. And the moment I asked him to save me, I know he did, because he instantly took away from me the desire to sniff tobacco. I've not touched it ever since." And she said, "Before you were born, I used to make baskets. And I have made one for your wife, by which she can remember me until we are together on the other side." She never met my wife, because we got married in the U.S. My wife is here, by the way, sitting in the back. We got married in the U.S. My grandmother never met her, but she said, "I have made this passport. She needs to hold on to it until she leaves this world, and then we'll be together on the other side." She died 2 months after that. When I came back to Kenya, I asked everybody, "Did you people know that grandma became a believer?" She did not tell anyone else. Nobody else knew. And if she had died in that condition without telling me, I would have thought that she was completely gone, completely lost. Let that be an encouragement to you. You've shared the gospel with somebody, and there was no reaction. Nothing seems to have changed at all. You don't know what may be going on in their mind. You don't know what God is doing in their mind. So keep praying for them, and keep waiting, and keep hoping. His proven record is unequaled in this world. He changes every life that is given to him, that comes to him. Is it arrogant to say that Jesus is the only way? No. This is how one of our colleagues put it, John Lennox. He says, "It's not arrogant to accept from Jesus what no one else offers." It is not arrogant to accept from Jesus what no one else offers. And C.S. Lewis put it this way: "I would pay any price to be able to say truthfully, 'All will be saved.' But my reason retorts, 'Without their will or with it?' If I say 'without their will,' I at once perceive a contradiction. How can the supreme voluntary act of self-surrender be involuntary? If I say 'with their will,' my reason replies, 'How if they would not give in?' The choice becomes yours. The choice becomes mine. Because as long as our will is involved, you hold all the cards and you make that decision for yourself. The people who love you, who would give their lives for you, those people cannot be able to make this decision for you. Only you can make it for yourself." This is how C.S. Lewis finishes this thought. "There are only two kinds of people in the end: those who say to God, 'Thy will be done,' and those to whom God says in the end, 'Thy will be done.' All that are in hell choose it. Without that self-choice, there could be no hell, nor soul that seriously and constantly desires joy will ever miss it. This is the God that we serve. This is the God that we preach. This is the God that we proclaim. Do all religions lead to God? There are too many problems with that claim if we say yes to it. There are all kinds of problems with it. The good news is this: God has spoken, and he has made it possible for you and for me to be able to know what the truth is. And his love is unfathomable and is offered freely to you and to me. Jesus did not say that 'I'll show you a path to God.' He said, 'I am the way.' He did not say that 'I'll show you how you can get enlightenment.' He said, 'I am the light.' What he was saying when he said, 'I am the truth,' he would not just lead us to truth, but he is the truth, is that the back stops with him, that all your hungers, all your shame, all your sin, all those things, you can actually bring them to him, and he will heal you, and he will make you what you are meant to be right from the beginning. That is what the gospel message is really all about. And that's why this question about whether all religions lead to God is so significant, so important, because there is a powerful, powerful answer to it. And the answer is Jesus. And beneath his cross, you and I can find the salvation that we are looking for in this world. Let us pray. Lord, we thank you so much for the power of the gospel. We thank you for the presence of the Holy Spirit who tags at our hearts so we can be able to receive its message, to hear its message, and to really understand it. We thank you, we praise you, we honor you, Lord, for one tribe. We ask, Lord, that you will continue to be magnified and glorified in this place, that whatever is preached from this podium may be words that will have eternal consequences for good for the people that hear them. Pray for the pastor and for his family and for all the leaders of this church, and ask, Lord, that you will reveal yourself in a powerful, powerful way as the person who planted this church and the person who is looking for people who do need to hear the truth of the gospel and be saved. We honor you, we praise you, we glorify you. In Jesus' name, amen.